Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently. Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And we are back. One final segment here on this post OTA number two edition of Inside Black and Gold. It becomes more and more annoying to explain what we're talking about as the OTAs go on, because it's like, oh, you have one headline, like, oh, Saints OTAs, but then you have another one, so it can't just be Saints OTAs again. Now it's the second Saints OTAs, and then it's a whole thing. But we're just ramping up, right? Training camp's coming, and we're gonna have a lot of that. We're gonna be ready when it hits. Okay, we're going through the questions. Have several good ones. The first question I want to get into, and it's a good one, is Eric Howard. How is the QB to wide receiver chemistry going with Derek Carr and the wide receivers so far? And I would say, you know, it's coming along. I think Derek said, phrased it as he's asking a lot of questions right now. And when he says that, he means, in a lot of instances, he's just throwing and seeing what happens, right? Like, he is seeing how the receivers, the tight ends, all the pass catchers kind of react in certain situations, right? How they get in and out of breaks, you know, when they open up, like that sort of thing. And so that comes with time. I do think that Rashid specifically has gotten on top of several of Derek's passes. And when I say that, I mean, I think Derek has underestimated kind of the, not even the speed, but the quickness of Rashid in short areas. Like when he runs that whip route, he gets out of it so quickly that by the time the ball gets there, it's behind him, because that's just something that you have to adjust to. And that's something that comes over time, right? I think that today they were on target a lot more. And so I think that's kind of where you're at. Same thing with Chris Olave. It's a very similar scenario. There was one play that he rolled out today that Derek Carr rolled out and tried to hit Juwan Johnson down the sideline. He really should have just thrown it in the dirt. I think in a game, he probably would have thrown it in the dirt. Instead, it gets intercepted. And I think that's one of those situations where Juwan's not making that play. You know, I love me some Juwan Johnson. I think he's an excellent player. That's just not a situation you put him in where he would have to kind of stop his momentum, come back and work back to the ball on the sideline where you have a limited ability to even come down in bounds. You're basically asking him to play defense on that play and maybe catch it if he's lucky. You know, that's the sort of thing that I think over time you'll be like, yeah, that's a ball I shouldn't throw. And that's not something you expect to have ironed out on the second day of, or I guess it's not the second day, on the fourth team practice since the start of OTA. So I'd say it's coming along. I'm curious what ends up happening with Michael Thomas, right? Because that is a connection that we have not seen at all. And I do think that that's a unique connection that a quarterback and a wide receiver have to have when you play like Michael Thomas does, because Michael Thomas doesn't need to create separation to be open. And when I say that, I mean like that throw can be made, but it requires a lot of trust to make, right? When he's just boxing somebody out and you're like, all right, I'm going to throw it there and you're going to go get it because you're stronger than them and you're going to make the play and you're going to make me look good. Quarterback's got to trust you to do that. And that's the type of thing that I'd like to see develop. And unfortunately, we will not until training camp, I imagine. I do not think that it'll be on the field for minicamp, but either way, we're going to find out. And I think that connection is going to be important. Will he stay on the field for a whole season? Will he stay on the field for even 8 games? I don't know, but that's going to be a very important answer when it comes to the chemistry of the wide receiver room. Tedrick Covington asks, if Taylor does win CB2, he would still play the slot because Adebo is better outside. It's not really a question. but I do want to address it. I actually disagree with this. I don't think what you're going to do is go through camp and have a position battle with Alante Taylor and Paulson Adebo and then say whoever wins plays that position and whoever loses plays a position they haven't been working at this entire offseason, right? Because the responsibilities at the nickel are very different. You know, and I think they all can do it. All the, you know, I say all. Marshawn's not really ever going to be a consideration for the nickel, not because he can't, but because he's too good outside to even consider it. But, like, I think Bradley Roby, Alante Taylor, and Paulson Adebo all could theoretically play the nickel. I think you also have Lonnie Johnson. You have Jonathan Abram, who could theoretically play the nickel. But you want whoever you are going to start there to be working on that position throughout camp. And so, to me, the most likely candidate to play at nickel is Bradley Roby. Still on the roster. He's a veteran. He's played it the last 2 years. He's played a lot of nickel in his career. And the depth on the outside is not going to stop being a thing that you need, right? You're going to have it. So it might be a little frustrating at points if everyone's healthy and one of Alante Taylor and Paulson Adebo aren't on the field. But I don't think that they're going to just reflexively say, okay, he didn't win that, so he's going to play over here. I think that you want to develop that position just like you want to develop your outside cornerbacks. And let's be real, the outside cornerback position gets hurt about as often as anyone in the NFL. And having a guy who's been working at that position and is ready to come in and play it is a luxury that not a lot of teams have, at least at that level where you trust them. I think it's going to be Alante Taylor winning that job out of camp, but you know, we haven't really gotten to see any one-on-ones, anything like that. But this, the way he works, I have a feeling he's going to take that, if not before camp, you know, early in the season. Either way, it's a good point. I do think it's going to be something to watch is who plays the slot, because, you know, for years you had C.J. Gardner-Johnson, or at least for 3 years you had C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who you went in, you never questioned who the slot corner was going to be. Eric Howard asks, do you think DeMarco Jackson will make his mark on this linebacker group? You know, I wanted to talk to DeMario about DeMarco Jackson today, but we ran out of time. He was talking about all sorts of stuff, and, you know, I didn't want to follow up. He basically held a sermon, and I didn't want to follow that up with a, hey, tell me about DeMarco Jackson. It was just too, you know, he had a mic drop moment, and I didn't want to step on it. So we didn't get it, but I'm going to talk to him about DeMarco. I'm going to ask DA about DeMarco maybe next week, and hopefully one of these days we'll be able to catch DeMarco in the locker room because I haven't seen him yet. That said, I mean, I've been pretty outspoken about this. Yes, I do think DeMarco Jackson is going to get the chance to make a mark on this linebacker room. Will he be able to is a different question, but I do think the opportunity is going to be there for him. Now, you could add more players. You can add a veteran linebacker. The fact is, you didn't sign anybody. You didn't draft anybody. Right, you brought in a few UDFAs. You know, Nick Anderson, Anthony Orji are both interesting players. But to me, I mean, that's a pretty clear indicator that the guys in the room are the guys that you're going to go with, at least throughout camp, where you're going to give them the chance to show you that you can go with them. You know, maybe a Nephi Sewell, maybe an Andrew Dowell can step in there. But to me, it's the fifth round pick from last year that you didn't get to see is DeMarco Jackson. And I think the team likes him. I think they want to see him. So, yes, I do think that there is a very real chance that he makes a mark on this linebacker group. I just don't know what it's going to be, right? Like, you don't always need that extra linebacker, right? If Pete Werner doesn't get hurt last year, Caden Ellis, does he even get on the field? Do you even know? Does he sign that big deal? Or do you have Caden Ellis on a really cheap deal right now because Pete Werner played a full healthy season? So there's the question. But I do think that when you're kind of setting the depth chart at linebacker, and you're especially in the preseason, you're going to be seeing a lot of DeMarco Jackson. So it's a good question. Thanks for that. There's Eric again. When do you think the entire projected starting offensive line will finally get to practice together, mini camp or training camp? Definitely not mini camp. I do think that you will see a majority of them out there. And if you consider James Hurst to be the starting left tackle, then I think you're going to be pretty close. I think you're going to have 4 out of 5 if you consider James Hurst to be the starting left tackle, because Trevor Penning won't be out there. Cesar Ruiz, maybe. I find it highly unlikely, but it's theoretically possible. I think the most likely situation is first day of training camp, you are hoping to have all of them. You are hoping, I think you can bank on Cesar Ruiz being out there. Trevor Penning, just in terms of, okay, he was a few weeks behind when he got the injury. So there's going to be a few weeks kind of in the wash there that I don't know if they'll be ready at the exact same time. But I would anticipate, based on what we've seen from them, they both are moving around without issue. They're both been at practice both of these times. Trevor looks great. Doesn't look like he's kind of ballooned up, which is something that can happen to you if you're an offensive lineman that suddenly can't move around. So I would guess the first day of training camp, and if not, early in camp. Tedris says, I believe they might trade Roby. I mean, it's possible, but I mean, I don't think the depth at cornerback is anything you look at like, okay, yeah, we're completely fine there. I mean, last year you thought you were fine and suddenly you're starting Chris Harris across from a rookie. So I disagree. You know, maybe if they get a really good offer for him, but I think that Roby is going to be a valuable depth option for this team. And they don't have to trade him for cap relief, right? Like the cap scenario isn't really going to change much. So I would disagree. I think they're going to hold on to him again because he's a valuable player in the slot. Like you can put him in the slot. I think they're going to keep him around. I think that's where they're going to put him. Jazleo 12 says Mark Evans the second. How is he doing? You know, I I could come on here and tell you that, you know, he looks great. He looks fantastic. He hasn't allowed a single pressure because he hasn't. But I'm just going to tell you and be honest, it's really difficult to evaluate anything on the offensive line or the defensive line outside of, man, that looks like an NFL player. They look really athletic and fast and because they're not wearing pads. They're not even hitting. You know, they're like especially the offensive line, you know, you're not having them go at each other without pads on, right? Like you can have the wide receivers and the DBs kind of battle downfield. You know, you're still not going to tackle, but you're going to get a good idea of like, okay, you're going to move around. You're going to make a play on the ball. That's not the case with the offensive line. So, you know, until we get to training, like at least mini camp where you're seeing them multiple days in a row, I'm not going to pretend I know anything. He hasn't showed anything that stood out to me as bad, right? Like Yasir Durant was getting chewed out by Doug Marrone on the first day of OTA. It's like, that's a pretty good indicator that he wasn't doing the job. I'm not an offensive line analyst by trade. I know enough to be dangerous, but I'm going to withhold any analysis of Mark Evans at this point. But I appreciate the question. There's Devon says, I hope we don't sign a veteran linebacker only because I want to see DeMarco Jackson get a chance at playing. I mean, I think you could do both. You know, I think you probably will sign a veteran, but like last year you signed Kiko Alonso. It wasn't because you felt like, oh, Kiko is going to be the guy. He ended up retiring the next day, right? Like you brought in Quan Alexander by trade, and that was a different scenario because you gave up a lot to get him. Even when you brought him back, it was always kind of the plan. I don't think you're going to do that. I don't think you're going to wade into that pool quite that deep where you would see like a deal or along the lines of what they did for Quan. But like last year, you brought in a Joe Schobert. Like, I think just having those guys during training camp is actually valuable for the young guys. So, you know, I don't think that signing a veteran is necessarily going to be like, oh man, DeMarco never got his chance. But I understand what you're saying. I would also like to see DeMarco. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Like, that was a bummer last year to see him get hurt. Tedra says, I know I'm just really worried about the O-line. I can't help it. Big importance to me. Yeah, the offensive line is interesting because you have all of these high draft picks on it. Like you have all of these first round picks and even your center is a second round pick that you traded up. So, I mean, effectively a first round pick. It was your first pick in that draft. That was 2019. The first round pick went in the Marcus Davenport trade. But you nailed that pick. So, you know, it is strange. Like you have all of this value in that group, but it does feel like there's a lot of questions about it, right? Like Andres Pete, who I found out today has six siblings, the youngest of whom is like a five-star basketball recruit. Figure that one out. You know, I don't know what to expect from Andres Pete. Can he stay healthy? Is he even good enough when he is healthy? I think Nick Saldiveri has a chance to steal that job at some point this season. And it's more about just the quality of play than anything else. I think this is Andres Pete's last year on this team, personally. You might keep him around if the salary cap gets real tight, but I don't see it. And then the question is at left tackle. Can Trevor Penning be that guy? If he's healthy, can he be that guy? Is he going to have serious rookie struggles in a year where you can't really afford to let your quarterback get eaten alive, right? Like you didn't bring in this mobile quarterback. You brought in Derek Carr, who is expecting to be protected in that offense. And if you turn to Trevor Penning and it becomes a problem and you have to go back to James Hurst and you destroy Trevor Penning's confidence, that's awkward. So I do have some concerns over the offensive line, and they will be, you know, swayed a little bit by seeing Trevor Penning in camp healthy and working. Right now, just don't have that. So it's easy to be a little concerned, especially because we haven't seen Brian Ramczyk, we haven't seen Andres Pete, we haven't seen James Hurst, we haven't seen Trevor Penning or Cesar Ruiz on the field. It's been a lot of backups. There was a question about who's starting in these reps. For just perspective, when we were being let out of the indoor facility, they started their first and I believe only set of 11 on 11 drills. And so I was kind of peering over trying to see what was happening, but I couldn't make out who was starting at position A, position B, whatever. So I'm not going to pretend I know, but I mean, there's a pretty good rotation of, if you look at the Saints roster and someone's listed with, as a lineman, there's a pretty good chance. I would guess it was Storm Norton at left tackle and, you know, Calvin Throckmorton, I'm sure was in there. You know, it's the group you would expect. Yeah. And I mean, we're going to get more. I think minicamp is when you start. You know, I like DeMarco Jackson, for example, got first team reps in the first set of OTAs. Part of that reason was DeMario Davis wasn't there, right? It's still valuable information knowing that he is kind of the first one off the bench in that backup role, but it doesn't necessarily mean that this is a first team player. And so I never really try to make too many assumptions about what that means, what the depth chart's going to look like, until we're at least at minicamp where everyone is there, or at least everyone who is supposed to be there. And that's when I'll start to figure that out. But right now, it's really just kind of seeing what everyone has to offer. Hoodie Jube says, how many wide receivers you think we're going to keep this year on the 53-man roster? And who are those players you think will take those spots so far? You know, it's really going to come down to, it's a tough question to answer, because if you keep a seventh wide receiver, you're not keeping him because of his wide receiver skills. You are keeping him because he's a valuable special teams player. Like, being a quality wide receiver really doesn't even factor in, right? Like, Austin Carr, do you think he stuck around all those years because he was because he could make some really great catches on the fourth preseason game? No, he made it because he was working in other roles and he was a good blocker and blah, blah, blah. So I look at that and I'm going to say six probably. And you know, there's the obvious ones, right? You have the Michael Thomas, Rashid Shaheed, Chris Olave. I would guess you also keep Bryan Edwards. Right now, that's who I'm guessing. Bryan Edwards. James Washington, I think, is the practice squad guy. I think he's going to be that practice squad veteran that you can bring up and elevate three times, right? And maybe not. We haven't really seen him. He was at the first OTA practice. He wasn't at this one. He was going to wear 89. My initial roster projection had A.T. Perry on it. Starting to wonder. I also had Traquan Smith on there. You know, it's tough. It's tough. And Malik Flowers is an interesting question. I don't think you are going to put him on the roster, just like you didn't put Rashid Shaheed on the roster last year. But I do think you're going to try to stash him on the practice squad. And at points throughout the season, if Rashid gets hurt or something like that, or you just need depth, he's there. But beyond that, you know, to answer your question, I think six would be my guess. And the other big question would be Kirk Merritt and Kawan Baker. Kawan Baker is a draft pick. He was a seventh round pick back in 2020. you don't know. Like, he's been around forever. Like, that's the thing, is he's been on this team. They stuck by him through the whole PED thing. They clearly like him. Can he make the roster? He's wearing 15 now. I don't know. Kirk Merritt, it's possible he makes his team as a running back. I don't know. He's been working with the running backs, but I do think that has something to do with the numbers at running back, because you don't have Alvin Kamara, Eno Benjamin, or Kendra Miller at this point in the offseason. So I think it might be a numbers game with why Kirk Merritt has started at running back, whereas last year he started at wide receiver and shifted to running back. But that's kind of where I'm going to go with, is Michael Thomas, Rashid Shaheed, Chris Olave, Bryan Edwards, Traquan Smith, A.T. Perry. Subject to change. Thank you for the question. I will say there are some players who have a better chance to make the roster if they can make it as a gunner. And right now you have Isaac Yiadom, A.T. Perry, Malik Flowers, Bryan Edwards, Kawan Baker, Jonathan Abram, Jordan Howden, and Shaq Davis. And Ugo Amadi, one more. I think those are players who you're just like, okay, is it going to be an extra wide receiver that makes the roster if A.T. Perry looks like a great gunner, right? Or if Bryan Edwards looks like he can be a useful gunner or a jammer? You know, that because that's the question you're trying to answer. That's all I got there. Louise Lockett says, hashtag free Taysom Hill. Hey, Taysom Hill's not even here. If he wants to be freed, he's got to show up. There's one. This is a question that I've seen a good bit. Jazlio 12, is it possible Winston is traded for Carr's favorite slot receiver? You know, I don't think so. And obviously, we're talking about Hunter Renfrow. We have another question from 504co talking about Hunter Renfrow here, asking if, you know, if there's any whispers of a potential Hunter Renfrow trade, blah, blah, blah. I think it's possible. I don't think it's guaranteed. Like, I saw someone saying, like, the reason they only have 89 players on the roster is because they're holding a spot for Hunter Renfrow. I mean, I can tell you that they may very well be looking to trade for Hunter Renfrow. It's not, they're not holding a spot open for him. That would just be silly. Like, what? You can, that's not, there's no reason. They're holding a spot open because they don't have anybody to sign. And it just makes sense if you, rather than just bring somebody in, that you're just keeping it open in case someone does become available that you're interested in. But that's not a smoking gun that they're going to make this trade, right? I think it would be a good trade. I like Hunter Renfrow. I actually covered Hunter Renfrow in high school. I covered Hunter Renfrow and Bryan Edwards because they both played high school football in South Carolina. One went to Conway, which is actually where Coastal Carolina is. If anyone knows the college, Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers, Hunter Renfrow went to Socastee and he was the star quarterback at Socastee. He was dominant. He actually walked on at Clemson. I remember that thing. And I was thinking at the time, he's gonna make that team. And he's going to be good, and there you go. But no, I think it's possible. I do. That said, I don't think the Saints are going to want to give up anything significant for him, and I don't think they're trading Jameis Winston. I don't think it makes fiscal sense, and I think that, you know, they like having a quality backup quarterback. Keep in mind, Jameis had the option to leave. He chose to stay, and the team was like, great, let's rework that deal. We're going to keep you around. It would be a rough look if you just suddenly said, nah, Jameis, get out of here. Go hang out in Vegas with Jimmy G's broken foot and the ghost of Derek Carr. Jameis Winston today said the Saints have the best quarterback room in the NFL. So can answer that question for yourself. Louise has been big on this. If the Saints don't let Hill compete for a quarterback spot, let him seek employment elsewhere. Hence the hashtag free Taysom Hill. I mean, if Taysom Hill ever gave an indication that he wanted to leave, then maybe, but I think he likes it here. I mean, I think he's fine with playing the role. Yeah, and as you mentioned, Dennis Allen did say he likes Winston tonight. And I think he does. I think that this is a situation that everyone is okay with. You know, obviously Jameis would like to be a starter in the NFL, but he also likes the situation he's in. That's why he chose to stay in it. We'll have a lot more from Jameis. He talked extensively in the locker room today. Haven't had time to go through it yet, but in the next episode this week, I'm going to break out a lot of audio. I have some Rashid Shaheed. I have some Alante Taylor. I have some Jameis Winston. I think there's one more that I'm forgetting. Oh, DeMario Davis. We're going to get through all of that in the next episode. Steve Geller is going to be on here, so it won't just be me rambling to you for an hour. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that episode. But I did want to come on here and kind of just download a bunch of information while it was fresh in my brain. I think I have successfully done that. So I will wrap it up there. Thanks for everyone who listened, everyone who jumped in, left a comment, left a question, all that. Always appreciated. I enjoy doing these mailbags because I think it just gets to a lot of points that everyone's thinking about that I might not necessarily be keyed in on that you want to know about. So it's always helpful. And if you want answers to anything else, hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. Follow along at WWL.com. You can finish out the night with Sports Talk if you'd like over on WWL AM 870 FM 105.3 in the Odyssey app. It's free. Check it out and check out Inside Black and Gold wherever you get your podcasts. All right, y'all. Be easy. Peace.